I'm Dr. TJ. With me, as always, is Erin.
Hello.
She wasn't even ready. Ladies and gentlemen, she wasn't. We've been sitting here waiting for the time to pass, and the microphone's like 3 feet from her. She had to grab hold of it. Her eyes were great big and wide, like, oh my gosh, I'm on the air. So that's how we start the show today, laughing at Erin just a little bit. This is a continuation of the last show, which we were talking about polycystic ovary syndrome, or PCOS. And when we closed last time, we're not going to go back and go through all of the, I'm not going to go back and hit all the high points. You guys can just go back and listen to part one. But I want to go back and I want to talk for just a minute about the stuff that we had finished up with. And that was talking about the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. And we kind of blew through that kind of quickly at the end there. And I want to just touch on the fact that what we find a lot of times with someone complaining of PCOS, if we can figure out, is there a thyroid concern or issue, or something not functioning the way it's supposed to there, and or is there adrenal issues? Oftentimes there's both. It's not usually one or the other. They go hand in hand. And you're out there thinking, why does it go hand in hand? It goes hand in hand because we're talking about thyroid hormone, which affects all of your metabolism. Everything that goes on in your body is affected by thyroid hormone. And the adrenal glands manufacture almost all your hormones. And so now we're talking about all hormones, all functions are affected. So, of course, that's going to affect other things. So, while there's maybe not just piles and piles of information out there that directly says, you know, if you fix thyroid problems and adrenal problems, you fix PCOS. Just because that information isn't there doesn't mean that it's not true. Because, you know, we have lots and lots of people who have thyroid issues that really have autoimmune thyroid and they're never even treated for it. So you gotta keep in consideration where the information is coming from and how the information is being interpreted, digested, looked at, and then applied to you. Because this is all about individualized medicine and individualized healthcare. Is what does it take for you? And that's what we're about. So we do know that, you know, if you have insulin resistance, we talked about that circle last time. The PCOS leads to insulin dysregulation, which leads to hormone imbalance, which leads to PCOS. Okay, so we know that insulin dysregulation is there. So we know that thyroid function and blood sugar are very intimately related. We also know that adrenal hormones and adrenal function and thyroid function and adrenal hormones and blood sugar are intimately linked. So it's just common sense. Again, we're your home for common sense, science-based healthcare. Common sense tells you that if adrenal glands and thyroid glands are out of balance, if you fix those, you have a higher likelihood of fixing the insulin issues, the hormone issues, and therefore the PCOS or the polycystic ovary stuff that's going on. So it's just common sense there. So that's how we approach things from a functional medicine aspect, is you can't just say, oh, someone has PCOS, you know, good luck with that. It's not a pill for a problem. It does not work that way. And any of you out there who are suffering with it know, you know what, my doctor told me I had PCOS and they gave me birth control pills and I still feel like crap and it's still there and it still hurts every single month or it hurts constantly and I'm gaining weight and nothing is getting better and I'm really getting frustrated and I'm angry all the time. And I mean, the list just goes on and on. You know exactly what I'm talking about. The approach to this has to be something different.
If you're actually going to fix it.
If you're actually going to fix it. That's exactly right. Now, you're more than welcome to ride that hamster wheel, you know, round and round and round and stay exactly where you're at.
Right. And a lot of people have. And before they end up in our clinic. You know, I mean, a lot of people, unfortunately, don't know that there's another way to do things. That's one of the problems. But another is, you know, I mean, we hear a lot. Well, I figured my doctor knew what they were doing. And it takes a long time of suffering before someone finally says, I'm not doing this anymore.
Right. Right. Exactly. So I think that went back and touched the HPA axis enough to make it not feel like it was shortchanged at the end of the last show. So I wanted to talk a little bit on how useful is an actual diagnosis of PCOS. Like a lot of syndromes that are out there, and we talked about lots of syndromes that are out there, as opposed to, you know, one cause, one disease. There are syndromes where you have lots and lots of different causes. PCOS tends to be not. It tends to be more of a diagnosis of exclusion. So you rule out this, and this. So what you're left with is PCOS, and that is that's kind of a pitiful way of thinking. There are reasons that people have PCOS, and just using it as an exclusionary, or coming up with things that are exclusionary to say, well, you don't have this, so it has to be this. Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense either. There are better ways. There are things that you can do that are easier and can give you answers better. So from a traditional medicine standpoint, a diagnosis of PCOS really doesn't do you a lot of good. Now, then the next question that I would throw out there for you to think about is, does a functional medicine diagnosis of PCOS, does that help you? Yeah, it kind of does, because if you're able to say, okay, I have this PCOS stuff going on, and these are the things that are driving it, as opposed to saying these are the things it isn't, that's a much better answer, right?
But we're really just looking at what the symptoms are, and if the symptoms point to PCOS, well, we know where to try to look for the root cause, because in functional medicine, you're looking for the root cause, as opposed to, you know, in the conventional model, not to sound like too much of a cynic, but it is generally, you know, you have a diagnosis because that points you to what pill you are going.
Pill for a problem.
Right. I mean, and that's why they, you know, most conventional medical doctors want to find a diagnosis, because right. then that tells them what medication or what group of medications you need to be on.
Right.
In the functional medicine system, you're not really looking at, you know, okay, it's PCOS, so now we're going to do this. It's, okay, we think this is PCOS, so this is the testing we need to look for, because these are the root causes that could be contributing
right.
to the symptoms of PCOS.
Right, right, exactly. I mean, there are a lot of examples of this stuff out there in medicine, as far as like, okay, here's a pill for a problem, but the actual underlying cause may be something completely different, because the pill is really just fixing the symptom. And one of those is erectile dysfunction.
Right, right. No, exactly.
I mean, erectile dysfunction, you know, they give you, that's a symptom. If that's what you're suffering with, that is a symptom of something much bigger going on in the body. And to just take a pill to fix that symptom isn't answering the question. Well, there are likely vascular issues going on, because this is a blood flow problem.
Well, and I think what's interesting about that, and what a lot of people don't know, is that Viagra was actually erectile dysfunction was actually created by an advertising agency in order to sell Viagra. So it wasn't a diagnosis that existed until Viagra came up. And so now that, you know, they have a pill to fix it, then it becomes a diagnosis. That doesn't really make a lot of sense, right? Because there's so many things, you know, like TJ said, that could be causing erectile dysfunction.
Right.
And PCOS, similarly to that, there's so many, and, you know, like so many other conditions, there's so many possible root causes. To just cover it up doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right.
Plus, we know in the case of PCOS, we don't really have anything that's even good at covering it up.
Right. I mean, I threw out there with erectile dysfunction, I threw out there that it could be an atherosclerotic vascular issue. But, I mean, in, you know, worst case scenario, I mean, we're talking, it could be a tumor that's affecting the nerve supply. It could be hormone imbalance. It could be blood sugar dysregulation where it just doesn't function. I mean, there are so many different things that it could be. And just pill for a problem isn't the answer. And the same is true with PCOS. Finding out what's driving the condition is a much better answer than saying, well, it's not this, so it has to be this. That just does not make sense to me.
Right. Well, and so if someone comes in with PCOS, like we had mentioned before, that gives you, okay, this is an avenue we need to at least explore to see what else is going on. What symptoms do you have that make you, you know, that led to the diagnosis? And, you know, what testing do we need to do to find out what could be causing, you know, whatever led to the PCOS?
Oh, I've got one. So people that come in that have PCOS, I ask them, are you insulin resistant? And they look at me like I have three heads. And I oftentimes will get stone cold silence, or I'll get, no. I'm like, okay, do you actually know that you don't have insulin resistance? Were you tested to find out if you had insulin resistance? Do you have any idea what your insulin levels are? The answer to those is always no. And then they oftentimes are like, no, my doctor ran lots and lots of blood work. And I'm like, yeah, but I bet you they didn't check insulin. Let's pull up your labs. And so the lovely online portals that we have, we pull them up. And I'm like, nope, you can see right here, there's no insulin level. So we have no idea what's going on and whether you are insulin resistant. They just never checked. And that's a huge, huge driver of PCOS. A huge driver. I mean, what do we say? Insulin resistance, hormone imbalance leads to PCOS.
Right.
Those are your big drivers. So I got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk just briefly about what we do at our practice and just kind of finish up with that thought that we had right there. And then we're going to continue on with other, you know, reasons of whether or not PCOS diagnosis is actually useful. You're listening to Wellness 101. Before the break, we were starting to talk about how useful a diagnosis of PCOS really truly is. And in the functional medicine aspect of things, we're looking at a much bigger picture than, you know, do you have these symptoms, and excluding, ruling things out, and then landing on a diagnosis of PCOS. We're actually looking for things like insulin resistance. We're trying to figure out, you know, are you actually ovulating? These are much bigger pieces of the puzzle. We're going to ask you questions regarding your cycle length. Like, how many days from beginning of your cycle all the way back around to the beginning of your cycle again? How many days is that? Is that 20 days? Is it 25 days? Is it 35 days? All of that stuff really, truly matters, because very, very few women who are not on birth control pills are actually on a clockwork cycle that is exactly 28 days. That's not it. I mean, it just doesn't happen. We recommend for tracking this, if you're not tracking, start tracking. If you think you have PCOS, start tracking. There are tons of different apps that you can use to track your cycle that will actually tell you what the average cycle length in days is for you. So when doctors like myself ask you, hey, do you know the length of your cycle? You'd be like, oh yeah, actually it's 29.8 days. Okay, perfect. We know exactly what your average cycle length is. That tells us a lot of different things. That tells us, you know, when you should be ovulating. It tells us what your hormone level should be throughout certain aspects. You know, that sort of information gives us a much better clue as to how your body is actually functioning and how you're actually operating from a hormonal aspect when we try to test your hormones, or when we're looking at what's truly going on with your, you know, adrenal gland balance and your sex hormone production. That's a big, big piece of the puzzle. So, you know, there's a lot of people that don't look at that. They don't look at hormones the way that we do, or definitely not as in depth as we go. They may look at a couple different things, but there are a lot of pieces of that puzzle that need to be looked at that I feel are oftentimes overlooked. Another piece of the puzzle is looking at, you know, do you have any kind of genetic or epigenetic predisposition? Did your mother have it? Does a sister have it? Anything like that? Are there things that we can test to find out, okay, you're actually predisposed to this based on your epigenetic information? There are things that, you know, you may do, choices that you can make, lifestyle things that you can alter to improve your chances of not developing or helping, if we've already developed this sort of stuff, helping to reverse that. And I'm a big believer in looking at lots and lots of blood work. For those of you who have been to our clinic, you know that we get a very, very comprehensive look at what's actually going on. The lab work that's ran by most doctors out there is severely inadequate. So without all that information, you can't tell, you know, what's going on a 1,000-piece puzzle if you're only given 6 pieces.
Right. Well, and part of that reason, we've talked about this before, is that insurance companies will only, you know, cover certain pieces, and which is ridiculous. If you've got, 1,000-piece puzzle and you're allowed to look at 6,
right,
how are you ever going to, to think that you would actually have a clear picture is ridiculous. I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. But at the same time, you have to make sure if you're going to someone, even a functional medicine practitioner, that they know how the puzzle, how all the pieces fit together.
Right.
Because we, I know I've talked about this a lot. We get, tons of the people, the vast majority of people that come into our clinic have gotten frustrated by the conventional medical system, and that's when they come and seek us out. But there are those who have already left the conventional medicine system and have, been treated by another functional medicine practitioner or someone in the alternative medicine field.
Who claims that they do functional medicine integrative work.
And some of those people have had, numerous blood labs ran, all different sorts of testing, but the person who was treating them didn't know how the pieces went together. So they actually have the information. They just don't know how to read and interpret the information to actually get you better. And I think that's where
that happens a lot.
And that's where my frustration comes in, definitely, because a lot of that, as we've talked about, insurance won't be covering that. So a lot of that is out of pocket. So just that's a cautionary tale for those of you who are looking for someone outside of the conventional medical system, but aren't really sure where to go to, because we've gotten a lot of people very frustrated and saying, okay, now I've spent, so much money on labs that no one was able to do anything with. And so be cautious and know that the person that you're going to has been adequately trained in functional medicine.
Right. So
was that kind of a off track there?
It was a little bit, but it was very good information. And it's encouraging to let people know that, don't give up. If you're not getting the answers that you're looking for, don't give up.
It's not that functional medicine can't help you.
Right.
It's most likely that the person that you're seeing can't help you.
Right. A lot of people don't want to go to a doctor that graduated yesterday. Right. You don't want to have brain surgery from the guy that literally got his degree yesterday. You want to go to the guy that's been doing it for a while.
Right.
We completely understand that. So don't give up hope out there. If you've been searching, don't, because somewhere there's a doc that can help you. So I guess that's about it. With regard to, does a diagnosis of PCOS really help you or mean anything to you? The actual diagnosis, it's my opinion, the actual diagnosis doesn't really help you at all, because you have to figure out, like I've said before, you've got to figure out what's actually driving that system. What's driving the problems? Not, you're having, these pains and it's likely this, or all you received was an ultrasound and the doctor's like, oh, nope, it's PCOS.
Right. The only thing it really does from a functional medicine perspective is it may shorten the conversation when you have the initial visit.
Right.
Because it gives, a little bit of a background of, okay, we have an idea of what you're probably dealing with.
Right.
But
you don't have to go through and describe all of your pains that are associated with it. I get it.
Right.
I know what the pains are that are associated with PCOS. I know what they're like if you have this bad enough that you actually have a cyst rupture. I know I've heard that explanation before. But what it does, it drives us into figuring out what's actually going on in the rest of your body that's forcing your system to react this way. Because this is just a symptom of a bigger thing going on.
Right.
And we have to get underneath it and figure out what that bigger thing is going on.
Right. So how do you do that? Let's talk about treatment.
So how do you do it? So there is a lot that can be done as far as treatment goes. It's as it's as vast and different, really and truly, as people are. Because again, we talk about how medicine needs to be tailored to you. You got to figure out what's going on with your system and fix that. And so that's the big difference, you know, that I see between a conventional approach and a functional medicine approach to PCOS. Conventional medicine, I mean, they it's 5 minutes with a doctor. All they're talking about is, okay, you have PCOS, and all they're paying attention to is the words that are coming out of your mouth that are associated with PCOS.
Right, it's a focus on the disease. Like, right. Okay, it is, you know, you are PCOS, so how do I treat PCOS?
Right, and then everything that you complain about from that moment forward, they're going to try to figure out how to get you back in that PCOS box. We've talked about different doctors have different boxes, and if you go to a doctor and they put you in the PCOS box, guess what? Everything that's wrong with you, they're going to try to drive into that PCOS box. Just like if you have a thyroid issue, everything that goes wrong with you, they're going to try to drive that into the thyroid box and just say, oh, no, it's because of your thyroid.
Right. Or depression. We see that right. All the time. Like, you've got
depression.
Body yeah. aches and pains. You're fatigued.
Oh, you're depressed.
You have brain fog all because of depression.
Yeah. Didn't sleep last night. Oh, it's depression.
Yep.
Your pinky toe hurts. Oh, it's depression. Hemorrhoids. Oh, it's depression. I mean, it's serious. We've literally heard that sort of rhetoric coming back from our patients. Now, I don't get it. But anyway, that's the conventional approach. And, you know, a lot of women complain of irregular periods. And I'm actually blown away by the number of young women who they start their periods at a young age. And then we ask them, well, how long did you actually go before they became regular? This takes some time, as most of you ladies out there listening know. It doesn't. You don't come out of the gate on a perfect schedule. It takes a little bit of time to balance itself out and your body to get used to the changes and what's going on. But when we have a 19, 20, 21-year-old female in the clinic and they're saying that they've never been regular, that never normalized, I'm like, okay, we have a big issue because you're telling me that you started when you were 13 or 14, whatever it was, and here we are 6, 7, 8 years later, and we're still all over the place. Let's go back and figure out what was going on. Let's talk about your life prior to 12. Let's talk about what's going on. Let's get some lab work to see where we are. Let's figure out what's actually creating this issue rather than just say, oh, everything that's wrong with you is PCOS. You've had it, you know, that's what's going on. We're just going to throw you in that box. I don't like that. In conventional medicine, they're going to throw a birth control pill at you to, quote, normalize your cycle. And all you're complaining about is an irregular cycle. That doesn't give me any information. It doesn't actually help anything.
And let's face it, we could do a whole separate show on birth control pills, and probably will in the future.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that'll be fun.
Right.
That'll be fun. All right. We got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the conventional approach to PCOS and comparing that treatment with the functional medicine approach. You're listening to Wellness 101. Brings me back to some childhood Rocky. Oh, gosh. I'm so excited about that. A little boxing action. So, before the break, we were talking about treatment of PCOS, and we're going to be talking about treatment of PCOS for the next, maybe even the next show. There's a lot of information here that I think is going to be extremely helpful for people that are interested in,
right,
you know, figuring out how to help this, trying to maybe, you know, at least do a couple things on their own to see if that can help. I don't know. A lot of times, people need guidance with this to figure out what's actually the driver for them, because just guessing and figuring out, you know, oh, let's try this, obviously it doesn't
work very well. Well, and yeah, again, there are so many things that could be causing the PCOS symptoms. So it's really difficult to, you know, with this topic to say, okay, this is what you need to do, other than you need to get tested and find out what the drivers are.
Right.
Because it really is individual to each person. There are some, you know, main causes that, you know, that we would look for, but it really is different for every person.
Yeah, it's how they interact and interrelate with each other that really matters. And before the break, we were talking about how conventional medicine, if you're given a diagnosis of PCOS, they just throw contraceptives at you. And a lot of times they're doing that to women who are just having irregular cycles, and not even, that's just it. They're just, well, my cycles are irregular, and the doc's like, oh, here, take these birth control pills. I mean,
and all we hear, I mean, I can say this as a woman who, you know, I mean, anytime you go to an OBGYN, especially when you're younger, if there's any issues with irregular periods, or really pretty much anything, you know, you're
itchy scalp, birth control pills.
It's recommended you go on birth control pills. And no one, I mean, to me at least, has ever discussed any sort of, you know, downside to taking them.
Right.
It's, I mean, it is so pushed that it's like, well, you're of this age, you need to be on a birth control pill, period.
Right.
And nobody talks about the fact that there may be reasons to stay away from them.
Right. And the thing about it is oral contraceptives, birth control pills, they don't actually address anything that has to do with the actual underlying causes that are associated with PCOS. They don't lower your risk of PCOS. All they do is regulate your cycle. And for the most part, most women come in and they say, all it did was make me know exactly when the pain was coming because it didn't really help anything.
It'll also make your mood change. A lot of times it'll make you gain weight. I mean, you know, like a lot of people have skin issues. I mean, the list goes on and on. And while I had mentioned, you know, we could do a whole show on this and may very well do this because I know we get a lot of questions about birth control pills. You know, the bottom line is, as functional medicine practitioners, you know, in our clinic, we're not fans of the birth control pill, and neither is any other functional medicine practitioner that we know. So, I mean, we're not alone in this, and this isn't some, like,
I completely
crazy
understand.
New age talk that, you know, we're...
No, and I completely understand why people use it. I mean, I completely understand not wanting to get pregnant when you're you know, a young female and trying to get through school and get going in your career. Completely understand that.
But for a lot of people, that's not why they go on it.
Right.
They're on
exactly.
it when they're, like, 13 or 14 to try to regulate, you know... their cycles and try to get them on a normal, you know.
And there's a difference. I mean, the menstrual cycle that is induced by taking an oral contraceptive isn't necessarily a cycle. I mean, that has to do with, like, all it's doing is artificially inflating hormones, progesterones and estrogens to, like, basically trick the body. And then you take those things away and boom, you have a cycle. I mean, once you get into, like, understanding from a functional medicine practitioner's standpoint, once you get into understanding, okay, well, you know, if we're doing hormone replacement therapy on a female who is, you know, has just gone into menopause, you load that woman up with a bunch of estrogen, guess what you're going to do? You're going to induce bleeding again. You're going to induce a cycle. And that's just something that happens. It's just, that's part of it if it's done poorly.
Right.
Right. And so that's out there for all of you ladies that are, you know, on hormone replacement therapy and you're like, well, I'm cycling again. It's really frustrating. Well, chances are it was done poorly.
Yeah, and we will, like,
we'll
do
a whole show on that too. Maybe four or five.
There's
because
just so much to it.
It's a big, big deal. So anyway, that's one of the things is, you know, just oral contraceptives. I'm a much bigger fan of better testing and figuring out what's actually going on.
Right. Like, and we talked about this, things like gut testing, comprehensive blood panel, you know, heavy metal burden goes into this as well. And also the non-heavy metal burden that we may have from environmental toxins and things like that, that all could be contributing to hormonal disruption, immune imbalance, and chronic inflammation.
Yeah. And that, I'm glad you brought that up because that's one of the things. Toxic metals are huge endocrine disruptors. If you have lead in your system, if you have mercury in your system, I mean, it goes on. Thallium, thorium, cesium, barium,
and if you have not
aluminum,
been tested, you do not know.
There's no possible way. Blood testing
before,
is not the same.
You know, there is no reason why I should have ever had heavy metals in my system.
Right.
I have no background. I have no known exposure. And my mercury level was off the chart.
No silver amalgam, mercury amalgam fillings.
Nothing. And I mean, and so, yeah, when we tested it, I wasn't even on the test paper. It just said
the line,
you know,
went all the way to the right edge.
All the way off. And so, I mean, first of all, yeah, if you have any known exposure to any sort of heavy metal, you definitely need to get tested. But even if you don't, if you haven't been tested, you don't know. Because I was floored by that. Looking into the symptoms of heavy metal, you know, toxicity and mercury in particular, I could see why it was, you know, recommended that I do the test. But thinking there's no way this is going to come back as positive because I haven't had any exposure. So they're just, and there are some different things that can cause that. There's, you know, some of us have problems, you know, processing things out. This gets back to methylation and things like that. There could be genetic issues. But the truth of the matter is, you know, you need to get tested because that's the only way to know.
Right.
And one more thing, I know that I'm kind of off subject, but
no, go ahead.
If you aren't tested and you do have these issues going on, not only can that lead to symptoms like PCOS, it can also have a huge effect on fertility, which, I mean, so right. With, you know, me personally, I would have never been able to get pregnant had I not found out that I had, you know, the mercury issues and then actually gone through the process of getting the mercury out of my body. There are just so many benefits to knowing that you are free of heavy metals.
Right. And they, if you don't know that they're there, they can, like I said, they're endocrine disruptors. So they disrupt your entire hormonal balance. And that may not be an issue with you at 20 or 30, but it could be a huge issue by the time you get to 60 or 70.
Right.
The rate and acceleration at which you age will go much faster. There's the way you age, the rate at which you age is much faster from 60 to 70 than it is from 20 to 30.
But we're seeing that more and more now because I do think that we're exposed to heavy metals more now. We're seeing, you know, people finding it out later in life, but also it's gotten younger with people. I mean, and right. I think that leads to the, you know, increase in PCOS, the increase in infertility, because we have so much greater exposure than our parents did.
We're seeing kids in their, you know, early teens and even preteen years that have a toxic metal burden.
Right.
We're actually seeing this in our clinic. And, you know, moms and dads are just sitting there saying, how is this possible?
Right.
How does my kid have this much lead in their system? How does my kid have this much mercury in their system? And those are just really, and aluminum, those are the, lead and mercury are the two that we see the most, but there are a lot of them out there. So it doesn't hurt to get tested. So that was your public safety announcement for toxic metals.
My soapbox today.
Good job, Aaron.
Yep.
So back to treatment of PCOS. So you have if you have a couple women that come in, if we have a couple women that come in, you know, we might have a woman whose primary driver for having PCOS is actually insulin resistance, and her whole metabolism is messed up. And so for that, we may end up with, you know, with dietary things, we may end up saying, you know, we need to be low carb or ketogenic or something like that, intermittent fasting, whatever it takes to, you know, get that carb load down and get that metabolic dysfunction and insulin resistance taken care of. But for the next one, we may figure out that her gut is all out of balance. She has SIBO or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and then we've got a whole bunch of other stuff that we've got to deal with and address there, because there's no possible way she's going to digest, break down, and absorb and assimilate all of the nutrients and vitamins and minerals and proteins from her food. This is where testing is tailored to you, and the results of that testing tailors us even further to an exact treatment of how it's going to be best fixed in you.
Right, because you cannot treat two people with PCOS the same way.
Right.
Without knowing that they have the same drivers, and that's, you know, there's a small chance that that will happen, because probably they're going to have different things that are contributing to their symptoms.
Right. So we've got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to start to talk about the spectrum of treatment options that are out there for someone dealing with PCOS. And then this will likely carry into next week's show, where we finish up talking about, you know, all the treatment options and things that are out there and things that you can try. So you're listening to Wellness 101. If you're just tuning in, you have missed a pretty good show today on PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, minus the segment where Aaron actually talked and we got on the topic of toxic metals. It was entertaining. You missed a good segment there. So when we left before the break, I said that we were going to come back and talk about like some of the treatment options that are out there. And there are a lot that we're going to touch on, and we're just going to kind of walk through these. And it's going to take us a little bit because there's a lot of information that goes with these. But things of where we're going, we're going to talk a little bit about diet and specific types of diets and, you know, how you can manipulate your diet, supplements that are out there, things like vitamin D and vitamin K and zinc. We may even touch on a few others that are a little more obscure, and we'll definitely touch on them next week. We won't get to them this time. So, diet. I mean, for all intents and purposes, diet and exercise are big pieces of the PCOS puzzle. Now, what type of diet should someone do? We get that question all the time.
Right. And I think that this is, you know, I mean, there are two points that we want to make. We're going to go over kind of, you know, what diets you actually need to be looking at. And also, when it's kind of the opposite of, you know, we talked about when we have someone who comes in and they've been treated through the conventional medical system, which is usually when we get these people, you know, they've been going to their OBGYN or, you know, even an endocrinologist for treatment of PCOS. And then they come to us and we do things differently. Diet is something we're going to talk about. What we do see when we have people who have been treated in like an alternative medicine, you know, setting is diet's the only thing that's focused on.
Right.
And that's not good enough either. But we are going to hit on it because it is important.
Right. So, Going all the way back to the fundamentals of diet, knowing that the cycle, remember our cycle, PCOS, insulin resistance, and hormone imbalance drives PCOS, okay? So knowing that, and we know insulin resistance happens because we eat too much carbohydrates, we eat too many sugars, we eat too much stuff that we shouldn't be eating, if that's the case, then common sense, again, common sense place for information, it would make you think, okay, well, if eating too many carbs is a problem, then I need to be on a low-carb diet. And so people will scour the internet and find all these different types of low-carb diets. They'll find paleo, they'll find ketogenic, they'll find these like modified Mediterranean type diets that work people into a low carb setting. And that's what they follow. And that's good that you're looking, but not always are those the best types of diet, especially ketogenic. Ketogenic is not really as beneficial for PCOS. It's not one that we see as more beneficial.
Right. And that's not to say that we're against the ketogenic diet in general, because there are certain situations where a ketogenic diet is huge and we are definitely, you know, I mean, going to recommend that, but right, not PCOS.
Right. If you're really obese and you're, you know, basically, you know, you're full on diabetic, and we know that we have insulin resistance, and you know that your thyroid's messed up, and we know all these different things. Okay, yeah, maybe we need to go into a ketogenic
right.
type
or
of situation.
Are you dealing with cancer?
Yeah, are you dealing with cancer or something like that? We may drive you into a ketogenic diet. But if you're a, you know, 20-something female who is not overweight, who it works out, is, you know, apparently healthy, you just eat a few too many carbs, finding a paleo style diet is much better for you. Go grain free.
It will be better for you, and it will also be easier to stick with.
Yeah, much easier to stick with. And, you know, even I don't even go so hard as to say, you know, you have to be absolutely 100% paleo. You need to be paleo-esque. And, you know, I could get into that whole topic. That would be kind of a show in and of itself, of where paleo is very adamant that you don't have these foods. But I don't know. That I think that that's not really true.
It depends. Again, we always focus first off on food sensitivities because
that's right where I was going.
Really?
Yeah.
I was reading your mind.
That's right where I was going.
Because I think, you know, it's really difficult to put anyone on a specific diet and when you don't know if they are sensitive to a number of the foods that would right. be the core and, part of what they'd be eating.
And the big piece of that puzzle, and the reason that is because insulin insulin resistance is an inflammatory event. I said that a little fast. It kind of came out of a bunch of S's. insulin resistance is an inflammatory event. That means that your body is on fire. You are inflamed. So we need to do things to decrease the inflammation. And that one of the key pieces of that puzzle is taking away the foods that you're eating that you are sensitive to. Because every time you eat a food that you're sensitive to, you are inflaming your system. You are causing your house to burn down even more. You're adding fuel to the fire. So that's a big piece of that puzzle is, okay, let's figure out what your food sensitivities are. Now let's eat low carb based on that. Then we're tailoring specifically to you. Let's run a food sensitivity test that's big enough, you know, 50, 40, 50, 90 foods. That's not enough. You got to have a couple hundred foods on that test. You need hundreds of foods being tested, because if you only get 90, you're missing, and there's a test out there that does 200. You're trying to get 100% of the result with only 50% of the answers. So we've got to make sure that we get all the information. That's why we're big on gathering information and data collection on a person, because the more we know about you, the better we can tailor a plan specifically for you. And so if we go low carb based on food sensitivities, now we're really getting somewhere.
Right. Which is what people want. You know, I mean, they want to know what are the things that I can do that are going to give me the, you know, going to show me the biggest difference as quickly as possible.
And then we have exercise. When we couple exercise in here, now we have to know, okay, well, do we have anything that would mean that your exercise needs to be at a lesser intensity than someone else? Do you have autoimmune conditions? So, you know, you need to not exercise as intensely as someone who doesn't. You know, what's going on in your world? Where's your support? How far do you have to go to the gym? You know, if you have to get up and drive, you know, 20 minutes to go to the gym, most people don't do that. So let's figure out what you can do in your house that you don't have to leave for. What can you do in your neighborhood?
Right, or if you have small kids or something, you know, of course, we've got to learn how to work around those things.
Right. And you stick some Velcro on and put them on the wall and then do your workout. That's what we do.
You just chase them.
Yeah, you just chase them. Just feed them some sugar and chase them. And then work out when they crash. It'll be great. In all seriousness, that's a big piece of that puzzle is you get that exercise piece with a proper, you know, low carb diet that fits to you. Now you're getting somewhere.
And you really need to go somewhere that understands all of this, because so often we hear people with PCOS who have been told, you need to be working out. You need to be, and they're pushed and they're pushed. And if we don't know that they have other conditions, that could be driving the symptoms to go, you know, I mean, to get even worse, and it could be causing additional problems.
Right. And that's when people say, well, I've been doing all these things and I'm just not getting any better. And then
they tell themselves they're lazy.
Right.
When they can't do it.
Right. Exactly. Or they're going around telling everyone, well, I tried this and that just doesn't work. When in fact, you didn't know that you weren't doing everything that could be done.
Right.
Then that's even more frustrating to someone.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think PCOS patients in general there's so much frustration that goes into it, because there is so much shame that goes into having these issues that you are doing what you think you're supposed to be doing and you aren't seeing results.
Right. Or that you're doing something wrong.
Right.
Which is even worse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's unfortunate the way everything is and goes, and I wish it were better and I wish it were different, but there is hope. There are people out there that can help. We can help by all means. You know, if you want more information, you know, visit our website. The Institute of Natural Health.com. Tune in next week where we finish up with some, you know, various types of treatments for PCOS and things that you can do at home that at least get you moving in the right direction. I mentioned our website, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. You can call us. Our phone number is 314-293-8123. Follow us on Facebook or Instagram. Or everywhere. Send us an email. We like responding. Send us a Facebook message. We'll get back to you as quickly as we can. So that's about all we have for today. So for Aaron, I'm Dr. TJ. This has been Wellness 101. Thanks for listening.